Our reading today is from the 7th chapter of Matthew, beginning with verse 6. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. And here's a warning. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And to the one who knocks, the door will be open. And then from the Proverbs chapter 9. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. May the Lord add His blessing to our reading of His Word and of our hearing the Word. Now in Matthew chapter 7, there's a general theme in the first 12 verses that you might be able to peg as the Christian's relationship to other people. And yes, I have once again been so bold as to take only a part of this great sermon, and I lifted it out from all the rest of the sermon. And if any of you are ever tempted to take one of my sermons apart and quote only a part of it, I hope you won't. That, of course, is because my sermons are in no way comparable to this sermon preached by the absolute master of preaching, Jesus. I would hasten to say to you, my friends, by taking apart various portions of this famous and grand Sermon on the Mount, I seriously don't want anyone to think that I may be disrespectful to Jesus to do this. I do this because it is almost surely what Matthew wanted his readers to do. As you know, the more you study it, the more you read it over and over again, that is Matthew's chapter 5, 6, and 7, all of the sermon, that you read all of it, you get thoroughly impressed that Matthew is sitting there taking notes, and he's realized the enormous amount of teachings Jesus is pouring out on them. And so he tried his best to get as much of it in one written form, as one major teaching, as much as his notes would allow. Maybe that's how he put it together. That's how he put this writing of the famous Sermon on the Mount. I don't know for sure. Or it could have been as Luke records the Sermon on the Mount. The teachings of possibly this one day on the mountainside. Luke, you see, spreads these teachings throughout his gospel account, indicating that maybe Matthew's version was a condensed version of several times that Jesus sat down to do some specific teaching or preaching, whichever one you want to call it. But here's perhaps an indicator. In Matthew's account, as I say, possibly a condensed account, the relationship of our text for today with the preceding and the following verses is not clear. And so a number of commentaries that I read suggest that this short little text that we're looking at today is just an isolated sort of instructive couple of statements used by Jesus to make a specific point or two. So when you get to verse 12, you have Jesus saying, he says, those last things that I said to you, now that's how you apply it. Well, listen to Matthew 7, 12, because you don't have it written there. Just hear that in Jesus' words, not mine. In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. This sums up the law and the prophets. In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. That verse itself appears to be a summation, not of the whole sermon, but a summation of a few instructive statements that he's made here at the beginning of chapter 7. So let's get to the meaning of these few verses of text. The way people of the first century Palestine viewed and felt about dogs and hogs is radically different than most all of us view them in the 21st century. We like dogs. They're pets. Some people even have pigs for pets. But dogs were mostly wild, and they ran in packs, much as we see, wolf packs in frontier areas, the way they do today. Dogs were scavengers who often fought viciously over their food. And actually the name dog, that is, to be called a dog throughout the Old Testament, was a term of derision. It was a reproach to be called a dog. And hog, or swine, or pig, these were likewise derogatory, degrading names. Dogs and hogs were both ceremonially unclean, very unfit as human food. Well, think, if you will, about the characterization of the prodigal son. As Jesus tells it, this son sank about as low as one could in the eyes of his contemporaries when he, out of money and out of desperation, finally hired out to a Gentile to feed hogs. And he had sunk so low, and he was so hungry, he was willing to sit down at the table, to sit down at the trough, and join the hogs in their dinner. Just degrading. Exodus 22, verse 31, taught that the flesh of an animal ripped apart, torn by a wild beast, was not fit to be eaten, but as unclean and lowly, was fit only as food for dogs. Deuteronomy 14:8 lists the pig, the hog, as unclean and unfit for human food. Well, now here's an interesting and quite possible variant from the way Matthew 7:6 is almost always translated. What I read earlier was the NIV translation of the Hebrew word that comes out as sacred. I think in the King James it's holy. Don't give dogs that which is holy, that which is sacred. However, many years ago, a number of Bible scholars noticed that the Aramaic word for holy had the same spelling, without vowels, as the Aramaic word for earring. And since there are no vowels in the original manuscripts, this is a possible variant reading, since earrings cast before dogs would be sort of parallel to pearls cast before hogs. As a matter of fact, the Old Testament Hebrew teachings, which Jesus was taught, lists more than 15 instances where gold earrings were valued extremely highly. So it might now possibly read in Aramaic, "Do not give dogs your earrings, and do not throw your pearls to the pigs." The other interesting part of that is, the native down home in Nazareth language used by the family of Jesus, and of course also used by Jesus, was Aramaic, the language Jesus recorded as often speaking in public, and as his last words from the cross. So maybe earrings and holy carry a similar message. And pearls in the ancient world were valued really much as diamonds are today. It's illustrated by Jesus' parable of the pearl of great price. The meaning is this: pearls and earrings, things that are holy, thrown in front of vicious dogs or tossed hastily at charging hogs, are not going to restrain, they're not going to hinder their charge at you at all. And Jesus also warns that they will rip you to shreds. Dogs and hogs, well, they just have no appreciation for holy things of value. They have no appreciation for you either. But Jesus isn't calling people dogs or hogs. He's using those despicable metaphors to give as negative an image as possible, one that they clearly understood more than we did, than we do. He's speaking about the Christian's relations with people. A Christian, a Christ follower, can be as thoughtless in dealing with some people as a person who throws pearls in front of swine. Throws pearls, perhaps, with hopes that they'll stop and realize the beauty and the value of what's just appeared before them. Or priceless gold earrings thrown at a charging dog. Now, bear with me. I want to go back from this morning to where we were last week. Judging people. We started today at verse 6 of chapter 7. Now I'm going to go back to the first 5 verses of chapter 7. Since our lesson of today warns us to watch out for badness, bad people, that calls for forming some kind of judgment about people, doesn't it? Watch out for them. Are they acceptable or are they bad dogs, they bad hogs? Well, Jesus had just dealt with judgment. In Matthew 7, 1 and 2, Jesus warned his disciples against overly critical, premature judgment. The point is, only God can render final judgment because he alone knows all the facts, including people's motives. And then in verses 3 through 5, Jesus warned his disciples against judgment by a person who's a hypocrite. And he gave a vivid picture of a man with a telephone pole in his eye attempting to pick a little speck of dust from his brother's eye. That is a pretty effective illustration, I think. And this is where Jesus now says, but be careful to realize the depth of what you're facing. You see, although Christians are not to judge contemptuously or hypocritically, we Christians do need to use discretion and discrimination when dealing with others, lest you be harmed, or more importantly, lest the truth be sneered at. The sad truth is, some in our day, many people in our day, have no more understanding of the value of the gospel than dogs or hogs. No more than those have of the value of pearls and gold earrings. Christians must deal with people like this accordingly. And here I'd suggest that Jesus was very positively thinking of what he had studied in the Proverbs, one of his school books as a young Hebrew lad. Proverbs 9:7. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they'll hate you. Well, let me say, I think we'd be instructed by looking at the actions of Jesus. That is, what Jesus did. That's a good commentary on what he meant in his Sermon on the Mount preaching. So here are some examples. The high priest Caiaphas allowed Jesus to be condemned by witnesses whom this false priest knew to be false witnesses. The high priest, it says in Matthew 26, the high priest stood up and said to him, Don't you have an answer to what these men are testifying against you? So Jesus began to just tear those mockers apart. No, that's not what Jesus did. What Jesus did, said, but Jesus kept silent. An answer to false charges before a corrupt high priest would have been like casting pearls before swine. And Jesus would not reply to the soldiers who spat on him and beat him and made all sorts of sport of mocking him. Again, Matthew 26, Luke 22, you can read about that. Pilate, the Roman governor, procurator, knew that Jesus was an innocent man. And he was willing, even though he was actually reluctant, he was willing to allow an innocent man to die rather than to risk losing his office. Mm-hmm. And when he asked cynically, "What is truth?" Jesus chose not to preach to him. John 18, if you want to read that one. Jesus got to thinking and he said, "I'm not going to throw my gold earrings in front of a madman, a mad dog." King Herod then hoped to see Jesus work a miracle. And he tested him out with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there vehemently accusing him. And then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him, dressed him in an elegant robe, and then he sent him, the silent Lord, back to Pilate. I added that silent Lord in there because that's exactly what happened. He didn't reply. So I don't know which one that was, Herod, a hog or a dog, but Jesus knew and he used proper restraint. And here's an example from his teaching. When Jesus sent out the 12, he instructed them to turn from those who refuse to hear, shake the dust off their sandals, and then go to those who would hear them. That's in Matthew 10. The Apostle Paul followed the same strategy as illustrated by his turning away from the violent Jews, not trying to get in their face, but turning to the Gentiles at Corinth. Acts 18 has that story. So the Christian is under no obligation to argue with one who treats the truth as a dog or a hog treats pearls and earrings. I was reading some illustrations from one of my good books of descriptive word pictures, and I found this little short story. It's about a Navy chaplain. My dad started out in the military as a Navy chaplain, so it caught my eye. A Navy chaplain in Honolulu was buttonholed by a group of men who had just come into the barracks having been drinking, and they began talking with him, using obscene language. They ridiculed him. They tried to act like humorous sport by demanding, "Preach to us, Chappie. See if you can convert us." And the chaplain, bless his heart, bless his witness, followed the Lord's example and just remained silent. But since Christians are more tempted to fall back to extreme caution, I'm sorry to say, it is easier than to use robust zeal. It's probably wise to remind ourselves of some hard cases that were virtually and eventually responsive to the gospel. We're not always to remain silent. It was the woman at Samaria. At the well. It was Zacchaeus. It was that famous former harlot who came to supper at Simon's house. And there was the thief on the cross. All of these were presented and thankfully received the gospel. And I think putting it all together, here's what Christians trusting God's guidance should do. Christians should make the approach and then proceed with hope and with grace, or, as the case may be, call a halt on the basis of the response you receive. Just one or the other. Another way to say this is, while avoiding contemptuous judgment and hypocritical judgment, a Christian must make a tentative judgment on the basis of the facts, and then with prayer and spiritual guidance, act accordingly. So recall another reminder. You'll remember this from the mouth of Jesus, Matthew 7, 20, just a few verses down. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. When people depart from their basic humanity and act toward others like dogs that bite and hogs that rip and tear, then some measure other than speaking to them with the pearls of the gospel must be used. See, it's no virtue for Christians to be so naive that we allow ourselves to be cheated and defrauded, and especially by some racket posing as a Christian benevolence, or by some confidence man posing as a Christian. And just a few sentences later in Matthew 7, Jesus warns, "Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves." When people reject the truth, as dogs step all over and mash the earrings and hogs trample all over the pearls, when people reject the truth like that, however, we must continue to love them and to care about them, interceding in prayer for them. In the Old Testament, the prophet Samuel said to the rebellious people of Israel, "God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you." As a matter of fact, I was thinking about this. I remembered, I went back from chapter 7 to chapter 5 to what Jesus had previously said in verses 43 and 44. The balance. He said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." And he gives the reason why. "That you may be children of your Father in heaven." That's the way the Father in heaven does. We must never fail in love and compassion, even toward those who trample the pearls of the gospel under their feet. We are called to live out our faith, live out justice, live out grace, live out mercy, live out love. Because you see, we really and truly can witness to those who reject the truth by our true and visible, consistent Christian witness, the way we live.